Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. You know, I love doing these shows because every day when I'm doing one of these conversations with the amazing people we have, I learn something different and something that amazes me. And today is no different. We are happy to welcome back Mary Ann Brief, who is a professional certified health coach, but she is primarily a certified widow coach. She's also a clinical pharmacist and the owner of her practice, which is called Widow Rising. You know, we talk to a lot of coaches on these broadcasts, and there is a coach can help you in almost every aspect of your life, from your business to your professional life, you know, your family life, you name it. But this is a new one on me. I did not know there was such a thing as a widow coach. As Mary points out, losing a spouse can be one of the most devastating events one can ever experience. Life is changed in an instant, and you're mired in sorrow. There's just no doubt about that. And Mary points out one of the most gratifying facets of her coaching is how she can understand the impact of one's loss and what they may be experiencing because of her own personal journey. She says, in a safe and supportive space, she offers her clients the resources and tools to facilitate a transformative process, doing the necessary work of managing their grief and learning to help them find purpose and joy again. Think about a widow coach. You know, when you really think about it, it makes sense. But as I said to Mary on the phone just a moment ago, I'd never heard of this before. Before she became a widow coach, she was a registered pharmacist for over 30 years, and along with her husband, who is also a pharmacist, they witnessed a trend of over-prescribing medication, which puts patients at risk for medication-related problems and potentially very serious outcomes. And she realizes how critically important it was to prevent disease before it starts and to minimize the problem of over-medicating. They completed a rigorous health coaching certificate program intent on opening a wellness practice. But sadly, Brian passed away before they could realize their dream. And while Mary was grieving and came to terms with her loss, she realized how many other people like her, widows like herself, were in need of guidance. So in October of 2020, she became a certified widow coach determined to help others find a much-needed support system to rebuild their lives and to restore themselves to wellness. So that's really Mary's story. It's an amazing and a fascinating story. She was here last week talking with Jim Masters. They covered a lot of subjects, but I'm going to go over a couple of things that I think would be very helpful to those of you who did not hear that broadcast so that you understand more about what a widow coach does and what it takes to become a widow coach. So I'm going to bring her on right now. Her name is Mary Ann Brief. She's based in the Boston suburb of Norwood, Massachusetts, and it's really a delight to have her back and to continue this exploration of the world of being a widow coach. Mary, welcome. Nice to have you here. How are you this morning?
Oh, fine. Thanks, Doug. Thanks for having me.
You know, she sounds so good, folks. She's on one of those new 5G cell phones. It works well, Mary. Good for you. It really does. Let me ask you, first off, describe for me, well, here's my question to you. As I pointed out, there are a lot of coaches in the world. Being a widow coach does not sound to me like a fun form of coaching. Am I right?
I don't know that I'd characterize it as fun. I think that it's an opportunity for me to help somebody who may be stuck, as I was, find the strength to move forward. And sometimes widows don't really understand what it is that's preventing them from moving forward. And I've been trained to ask the right questions to help maybe unearth what it is that is keeping them stuck in their grief so that they can fully process their grief. We talked about that a lot last week, that grief gets stuck in the body and can actually contribute to health concerns. So process the grief, allow it out, and then plan a future that maybe you hadn't imagined, you certainly hadn't imagined prior to losing your spouse.
This is a relatively new specialty in the world of coaching. Am I right about that?
It is. The woman who started the Certification of Widow Coaches was herself a life coach, is a life coach, and a weight loss coach. And when she suddenly lost her spouse, she realized that there really weren't the supports in place that she wanted. And so she was a trailblazer and moved this forward. And since that time, she has certified. There's about 100 of us in the country.
And I'm intrigued to know that as someone like yourself who's been a pharmacist for 30 years, and being a pharmacist is a, you know, it's a wonderful career to have, why did you decide to stop doing that and to become a widow coach? First off, had you ever heard of coaching? I mean, that probably was never in your mind, was it?
Well, the health coaching was certainly in my mind, but, you know, it was honestly, Doug, the timing was a little strange. I lost Brian, my husband Brian, in August of 2019, and then I lost my job because of downsizing several weeks before the pandemic hit, the February, after I had lost Brian. And so it just seemed the right time to take all of the pieces of my life, the widow coaching that I had learned about, and the medication management that I had spent 30 years perfecting, the legacy guide development that we're going to talk about today, and the health and wellness coaching that Brian and I were really centered on just before he passed. So it felt like the right time to pull that all together and to be a light for someone else.
And the other thing that seems interesting to me, it seemed logically, if COVID were, you know, had not impacted the country like it did, being a widow coach is something you would normally do in person with a client, I would assume. It would be more beneficial that way. But how have you managed to do this with the pandemic and everybody working virtually? I guess you became a virtual widow coach. Would that be the way to put it?
That's exactly true. I've actually only met one of the widows that I've worked with. And we had a distance visit, and that was wonderful. And I hope to meet the other widows that I've worked with. They're all but one is in Massachusetts, so they're pretty easy to get to. But yes, the pandemic forced us to either do FaceTime calls or Zoom calls. And honestly, they worked beautifully.
So explain briefly what a widow coach does. What's the answer to that?
Yeah, and I think the short answer, the overarching goals are we're providing support, encouragement, and accountability in a safe space. And that allows the widow to do the necessary work of grieving in a way that feels authentic for her. But what is really central to this whole process and powerful is that it's that widow-to-widow engagement. Nothing compares to that shared experience. So many of the widows that I've worked with have had a therapist or a grief counselor, and while that has been helpful, they have found that having someone that really, truly understands and has walked their walk helps them to move forward.
And what, you know, as I'm sitting here thinking about this, it seems to me that being a widow coach could encompass so many different things. It's not just dealing with their grief. I mean, a lot of widows, I'm assuming this, I could be wrong, but there are a lot of things that go on in the world around them and in their household that they are not familiar with. Maybe their husband took care of all the bills, paid all the bills. She doesn't know where everything is, not familiar with the total bank account situation, may not know what their financial situation is. There are a lot of things like this that widows face. Am I right?
100%. 100%, yes. And that's really where the legacy guide development comes in. And I should point out right out of the gate is that this is not just for widows. This is for everyone. And ideally, it's done as couples so that planning is in place. And when one becomes a widow or a widower, they have that space to grieve and to not worry about the unknowns.
Yeah, so it's not just the grieving, it's all these other things. And do you help them with that? Is that part of a widow coach's duties?
I do. I wouldn't generalize that to every widow coach. I have a unique practice, and I think, again, the emotional coaching is what's central to widow coaching, but because of my life experiences, I'm able to offer those four pillars, and one of them is the legacy guide development, and it is offered to every widow that engages with me, yes.
All right, let's talk about the four pillars of your coaching. Explain what they are. I know you went through them fairly completely last week. There are four of them. There's one of them you didn't cover too much. So briefly, tell me what the four are, okay? And then we'll go into the legacy guide.
Yeah, sure. So again, the widow coaching, that's centered on the emotional coaching, helping the widow to understand, or widower, because this is offered to both, to understand that thoughts are thoughts and not facts. And often we get caught up in a loop of painful thought leading to an emotional response that may lead to an action or inaction that's not desirable. So again, and I used this example last week, you know, Joe always handled the money. I can't handle the money. So, you know, then you're asking the widow, you know, what is it that she's doing that makes her feel that she can't do that? And you're really trying to find evidence for her that she is capable of it. You're asking questions. Is she reconciling her accounts every month? Is she, you know, making the electronic payments? And maybe just showing her these things allows her to take another step forward, maybe to meet with a financial advisor or set up a budget, something like that. So the widow coaching works along that frame. Then there's the medication management. So some widows are either using prescription or over-the-counter medications, and her prescribers may not know all of them if she hasn't gone to a visit and declared every single thing she's using. So that process is called medication reconciliation. It really should be done at every interaction with a healthcare professional, even with a dentist. Sometimes it's not done, or it's not done completely, either because the widow intentionally or unintentionally leaves items off her list. And so the hazard of that is that her prescriber, her doctor, might be prescribing medication without knowing full well what she's using. And one example of that I highlighted last week was I had a widow with a heart issue, and she was using over-the-counter Benadryl to sleep. And the heart rhythm issue she had could be exacerbated by using Benadryl. So that was an example that I used last week. And then health and wellness coaching. So that's the third pillar. No surprise, many widows are at least initially struggling with self-care. So I survey the widow about sleep, nutrition. Are they getting all the health screenings that they need to? Are they moving their body? And then I provide guidance on how they can improve in those areas and feel better. Widows are at an increased risk for disease following the death of their spouse. Many are familiar with broken heart syndrome or the widowhood effect, and those risks are real, and widows really need to take the time to care for themselves and return to wellness. And then the fourth pillar is what I think we're going to focus on today, the legacy guide development. So widow or widower may not have had all the answers that they need from their loved one, and it spans a lot of categories. From disposition of remains to passwords, financial information, things you've already mentioned. So the widow has an opportunity now going forward to leave those answers for her heirs and the people that will, you know, benefit from her planning. So it really enables people that we leave behind to grieve without the added burden that comes from information gaps.
Well, all of this makes so much sense when you really think about it. The one thing that occurs to me, legacy guide doesn't really say up front exactly what all it covers. It covers a lot.
It does.
And it's maybe the most critical important of the things that you do cover. Mm-hmm. So let's go through it individually. How do you start to cope with a widow and approaching all of these various things that are included under your legacy guide category?
Right. So often widows are eager to do this because maybe the answers weren't there for them. And so I can tell you, in my situation after I lost my husband, we had done quite a bit of planning, but I didn't have all the answers. So I was very eager to make things easy on my children if something happened to me. So I sat down and I knocked out this 8-page document in a day or less. I mean, it really has every answer. So we're going to go through. I will tell you that what's foundational for legacy planning are the legal documents that some people have in place. So that typically consists of four parts: a will or a trust, the living will, or what other people might refer to as advanced care directives. That tells your healthcare proxy and your medical providers what your wishes are if you're gravely ill and you can't communicate.
Right.
And right. then there's the durable healthcare proxy or your power of attorney. So the person that you assign and you share with them what your wishes are in the medical realm. And then you also have a durable financial power of attorney. So if you're incapacitated or you have passed, somebody that can essentially keep your financial life going, make sure your mortgage isn't in default, et cetera. So again, those four pieces are foundational for a legacy guide, but then we build on it in several really important areas. So I would tell you in the method that I've developed, there are six components or domains to complete. And I always tell people when we start, it can be overwhelming. What we want to do is start with the most critical information and then add detail as you're able to. So something is better than nothing. And you want to commit to progress toward completion because it's a bit of a behemoth. So it might just be as simple as I want a mass of Christian burial and my sister Laura is going to assume ownership of the dog. It can be something that simple. And then you build on it. I will say that if you are someone that's of the mindset that you're gone and you're going to entrust all your decisions to others after you pass, it really is fair to explicitly state that so that your survivors aren't second-guessing their decisions. There are so many decisions that have to be made when someone passes, and it's really overwhelming, and there is a measure of comfort that comes from knowing that you are executing on what the person who has passed wished for.
This makes so much sense. So much sense. And I'm wondering, do you find most of the clients that you deal with have done this advanced preparation or not?
Yeah, interesting. So I checked this out recently, 32% of Americans have some sort of planning in place. And it doesn't define what that planning is. My guess would be that it is the legal piece that I spoke about, those four foundational pieces. I don't know how much more than that. And I think bits and pieces for everybody, I do have several people that there's nothing, and they're very motivated to get this done so that their children, again, can have some peace of mind. Because the children have just witnessed what their mom has had to go through, not having the answers. And you can imagine the children really want to not go through that again. So they're incentivized to help their mom pull it together.
I guess another question would be, what are the hazards of not planning carefully, not doing a will, not even thinking about it? You know, it makes it sound like we're almost a death-denying culture, and in some respects, probably are. Do you think that?
Yes, I absolutely think we're a death-denying culture. And, evidence of this that I see are that, again, the majority of couples haven't done any advanced planning, and they kind of carry on as though they're going to live forever, when in reality we know 100% of married couples will be widowed, right? The first time I heard that, I was, wow, and it makes sense.
It's true. But it is true. Yeah, you're right.
Sure. Yeah. And other evidence that I see for that is I've worked alongside hospice providers for much of my career, and what I saw time and again is that patients and families only accept hospice at the very end of life, sometimes with a week or less left to live, and that increases stress, compromises this beautiful transition that can happen with a well-established hospice plan. So for those reasons, I believe we're a death-denying culture. But the hazard of not planning that you asked about, there's two pieces to that I would address. The first one is if you haven't planned even the most basic form, your medical decisions will then be left to your medical team, and they may not act on what you wanted, what your wishes were. Perhaps you didn't want to be resuscitated if your heart stopped beating. Well, I can tell you that if EMS arrives at your house and there's no document that can be produced as proof that you explicitly state no CPR, they're going full court press. And that can be very traumatic to the widow watching that. So it is super important to have that in place. Some people put that right on their refrigerator. And I know in my state, there's a bright pink form, and you just put that up there. And, if you don't want to be resuscitated and EMS shows up, you hand that form, and they will not start. The other piece to this is if you haven't planned with a will or trust, you're tying up your assets in court, and the surviving spouse will have to wait for them to go through probate and then have a judge determine the disposition of your assets. So those are two hazards right out of the gate. So it really behooves everyone to do the planning.
You know, I'm also wondering, how can you be certain when a client reaches out to you that they don't need a therapist? And really, we come down to, how do you distinguish between coaching and therapy?
Oh, that's such a great question. And we did tap on that a little bit last week. Honestly, if there are some signs, and maybe feeling as if you don't have purpose anymore, having difficulty performing everyday activities, wishing that you had passed with your loved one, I would say losing the desire to socialize and be out with friends or loved ones, and, or even having continued feeling of guilt, blaming yourself for your loved one's death. Those could all be signs of complicated grief. And in those situations, those clients would be escalated or referred to a therapist.
Interesting. How can couples honor each other through this legacy planning, as it's worded?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, ideally legacy guide planning is done while the couple is still a couple. Again, only 32% of Americans have done this, so there's quite a few people out there that haven't done it. The guide acts as a roadmap for that surviving spouse so that they can confidently execute on the wishes of their loved one. It provides the answers and the action steps for moving forward. So depending upon how comprehensive that document is, each spouse may have articulated what they would want for the other, for the surviving spouse, how they would want them to carry on in their absence. It really can be a gift. If it's not in place or only partially done, the widow can honor her spouse by, as I said before, completing one herself so that his or her heirs and loved ones can take the time to grieve going forward without the worry of wondering if they're doing the right thing. And the guide, Doug, the guide can include anything. Mine has a sampling of some of my favorite music, specific instructions for my kids regarding donations, honoring my memory. I've completed my obituary, you know. They can fill in their own reflections, but I've done the hard work for them.
That's a good idea. No kidding.
Sure.
You've done
sure.
your
they
own.
Could,
good for you.
I have, because it took us almost a week to write my husband's. It was that
exactly.
difficult, and people were waiting on it, and we just couldn't do it. It was so hard to condense someone's life to that. So I tried to take that from them and make it a little easier. But my kids could continue to run this house, pay the bills. They have all of my contacts, medical, financial, legal. I even have a history of some family heirlooms documented. So, you know, they have sentimental value. They wouldn't know that if I hadn't written down, you know, some of those pieces. So it really can, it's not just all the cut and dry stuff. There's some fun stuff in there, too, that brings comfort. So ideally, if this is done in advance, two big things can be satisfied. Their wishes are known and can be honored at the end of their life, and it can be remembered and celebrated in a way they choose. But it also provides clear guidance on how to manage all these other things that we've been talking about. Because at the beginning, you said, you know, the husband, and I'm just saying this, the husband may change the oil in the cars, manage the food and medication needs of a pet, change the smoke detector batteries, whatever it might be. A lot of couples don't do that cross-training. You know, one of them says, listen, I'll take care of it. And while that's beautiful, it's great until it's no longer there and you need to know how to handle it. I had a situation with a pipe that exploded because I didn't have my irrigation system blown out in the fall. It went off my radar. We capture all of those things in the legacy guide, just every single component of running a house. That's one part of it. So honestly, Doug, I think it affirms the value that each partner brings to the relationship, and it's an opportunity when they're both alive to highlight the role they play in each other's lives, and it provides space for reflection and gratitude. Because once it's on paper, you're like, wow, you do all that.
Golly, this makes so much sense. Why is this planning particularly important for pets? How about that?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So if nothing is in place and there's no one designated or willing to assume ownership of a pet, often they're surrendered. So I can't imagine a worse scenario for a pet than to first lose their keeper or their human and then to be sent off to a new and less familiar, comfortable environment. So that's part of the legacy guide, too. But the best way to provide care for your pet after you die is to leave your pet and some money through a provision in your will or your living trust. So if you do this, the person you name will become the owner of the pet and will receive outright any money you leave to him or her for your pet's care. And further to that, the ASPCA recommends pet owners have this emergency plan in place. You know, even if you don't pass, but if you become sick or disabled, think COVID right now. Just having somebody that you could literally pass your dog, cat, hamster, whatever, off to, and then have an outline of every single thing, their habits, their feeding schedule, the vet, the grooming, the boarding. I've done this for my dog right down to where I keep her heartworm tablet and what day it's due.
I tell you, you are so interesting to talk to, and this information seems so valuable. It seems to me there ought to be a book for this, a Bible for what happens when someone dies. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there is, but anyway, obviously much better to have a live person like you helping people through this. I guess the other thing is, what steps do you think should be taken to make sure all of this information is accessible to those who are trying to care for your situation after you passed away? How about that?
Right. Yeah, great question. So let me start out by saying there are companies that offer what I do that did this before I did. I'm not doing anything new. I do it my own way. I'll say it that way. But there are companies out there that have an electronic vault, let's call it. There are other companies that offer you a hard copy booklet so that you can work through it yourself. Or you can work with somebody like me that walks you through the process and offers you a series of prompts to create this comprehensive document. No matter what format you decide, you have to decide who you're going to share it with. And at minimum, you have to alert them on exactly how to find it. So, for example, mine lives in my computer, and that's great. And my kids know that it's in my computer. They know what it's titled. But if my kids don't have the password to get into my computer, then, how is that going to help them? So it's really, really important to do that. And in addition to, letting people know how to find this, it's really important to keep it updated because things change. Loans get repaid, employers and insurers change, just to name a few. I have a repeating event on my calendar to read through quarterly and make the changes that are necessary. Some people do it once a year on their birthday or New Year's Day. It's whatever their personal preference is.
Well, you've given me, and I'm sure you've given our audience, a lot to think about, because there is a lot to think about in this kind of situation. And the point is, it's going to happen to everybody. You know, if you're married, it's going to happen. If you have a mate, it's going to happen. Even if you don't, it's going to happen to you. It's just very important. Mary, we've been talking to Mary Ann Brief. She's based in the Boston suburb of Norwood, and she has a fabulous website, which is really very interesting, and you should go there and look it up. It's widowrising.com, widowrising.com. Mary is able to help you, and it doesn't matter. She may be in the Boston area, but if you're in California or Florida or it doesn't matter, Texas, she can help you with telephone consultations, Zoom calls, whatever, when the time is necessary. Mary, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. This is an amazing new form of coaching, and you are really a great spokesperson for it. So congratulations. Thank you
for
giving
kind.
Us your advice. Okay.
It's great to talk to you. Thank you, Doug. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You are very, very well. I'm so glad I had the chance to talk to you. I have learned
thank
a
you.
Lot. And yet it's so much common sense. That's really the amazing thing about it. All right, everybody, we've run out of time for this show. I hope you've enjoyed this. Save this information, listen to it, and don't forget Mary's website, widowrising.com. Go there and get information from her, and obviously that'll tell you how to get in direct contact with her. So we appreciate your being with us. I know this information has been very helpful, and we hope you don't need it anytime soon, but it's always nice to have this information when the time comes. So until the next time, take care of yourself, be safe, and thanks again for joining us. Bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
We sure do. I'm Doug Llewellyn. See you next time, everybody. Bye.